Super Apuestas Podcast.
I'm your co-host, Stephen Graham, with...
J.R. Goldberg. How you doing, Steve?
Good, you? We're nailing that entrance here.
Yeah, you keep me on my toes with it, for sure.
It's because my Spanish is awful. So, I rely on you here. So we're back on the SAP. Third week, that's... For a Lucha podcast is pretty good. They seem to get canceled before then.
Yeah. We're the one percenters of the Lucha podcast world.
That's right. And before we get going with our match for this week, there was a question a listener asked that you wanted to.
Yeah. So one of the people on my Twitter, and I truly apologize that I do not remember who it was, asked after last week's episode if there were any famous mask versus hair apuestas matches where the person who had put their hair on the line, so the unmasked person, won and took the mask, which I guess to get it right out of the way, I mean, that is much less common than someone losing a mask in a mask versus mask match, but I suppose it's not unheard of. I did a little digging. The person who sort of comes to mind most is Perro Aguayo Sr., who took Conan's mask and Stuka's mask. And then Perro and Ringo Mendoza took the mask of strangers. And I also found on Wikipedia that Sangre Chicana took Ultraman's mask. And then you found a couple.
Well, I found at least Satanico. He took Mascara Magica's mask.
Okay.
So there's another one. I'm sure there's a lot more, but the thing is, hair grows back and masks don't. So generally, the hair is going to be lost. Like, we've gotten to the point where Atlantis said that he refuses to put his mask on the line against hair. He only wants to do mask versus mask matches because hair isn't as important, so.
Right. Yeah, which makes sense, especially for a guy like Atlantis, who I'm sure we'll get to on here.
You know, many, many times.
Many, many times. You know, because his mask is so meaningful, right? That, you know, like, even though it would be an awesome match, like him versus Casas or something like that, like, Casas has lost his hair 100 times, you know?
It's not that important. Or like Roosh or someone like that. Like, that would be a big match, but...
Yes. Yeah.
I think he probably said it just so he doesn't have to face Roosh.
Yeah, Roosh is probably the rare unmasked person who is thus far undefeated in Apuestas matches, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah. Didn't he lose his mask? Or he comes to the ring in a mask.
Yeah. But he does not... he's never lost a mask. Basically beating everybody, so you know, who knows with him what'll end up happening. But yeah, great. It'll be a glorious day when he does lose those flowing curly locks, though.
Imagine if they like booked a Cabanero versus Roosh.
Oh man, yeah,
man,
that would be crazy.
Oh, I mean, maybe when Cabanero's ready to graduate. And he has to do the ceremony.
Yeah.
he'll put it up. Anyways, let's get to the topic at hand here. If you listened to a podcast that I'm not sure is up yet, it's Timothy's from Pro Wrestling Only's show about live experiences that the name's escaping. I was on it talking about Smash Wrestling and I tried to promote this podcast and I talked that we'd be doing a Ring of Honor match to correspond with the 15th anniversary. However, we were reminded on Twitter that you should talk about what you like and that Lucha needs to be talked about more. So what we decided to do instead.
Thanks, Robert. Yeah. You can thank Robert for this one.
Yeah. So what we decided to do instead was go with a request from – I never know how to say his name. On Pro Wrestling Only, it's B-O-H-S Johnny. I don't know if it's supposed to be Bose Johnny or.
Yeah, I always say the letters in my name. I always say B-O-H-S Johnny.
Okay.
Or in my head, I should say.
Awesome. And he said he really enjoyed the first episode and would like to hear you guys do a show on Parada Morgan versus El Farion from 1990 sometime. Sometime is now. And
yeah.
1990 November the 16th is the date. So we will be doing that just for you and for anyone else who is listening.
Special request.
And if you want to get your request in, hit us up on Twitter, Pro Wrestling Only's message board, those places. You know, we're making a list, and we'll check it twice, and we'll do any matches you request.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously, like, there's no shortage of Westus matches that we can do, but we would really love to you know, have some interaction and do the ones that you guys want us to. Especially if there's stuff that, you know, Steven and I haven't seen before. You know, I think that's been the fun part of this. One of the fun parts is doing matches that I'm not as familiar with.
Yeah, for sure. Got to check out. There's so much great mass matches to check out that it's almost ridiculous.
Yeah.
So let's look at El Farion, the Pharaoh's career here. So he debuted in 1973, he lost his mask in 1976 to the famous Fishman.
Yep.
So, what did he do after that? He's won the hair of Tony Salazar. He's actually won the hair of Perro Aguayo in 1976 as well.
Yeah, I think it's important to note, you know, for both Farion and Parada Morgan, who we'll get to here, compared to the people that that have previously been in matches that we've discussed, especially at this juncture in their careers, if you sort of look at this match in context, both of these guys are like way further ahead and had a much more storied history than anybody else we've talked about. So, like, Ray Jr. certainly got there, but when we did it, that match in 92 or whatever it was, I mean, he was basically a young boy, you know. You know, Farion in this time is in his 40s, and Parada Morgan is not super far behind, you know. I mean, he was one of the best in the world at that point, you know, really in his prime. So it's important to note that, like, their lists at this point are much longer than the people we've had previously.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot to mention he also took the hair of someone called Bruno Victoria, who I don't know who that is.
No idea.
Okay. so he had two tag ones where he teamed with Ringo Mendoza. Once he took the hair of Paraguayo and Joe Polardi. Another time it was Sangre Chicana and Alfonso Dantes. So that's a pretty big team there.
Yeah, big names. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Sangre Chicana took El Farion's hair in 78. El Farion in Aguila, India, they took the hair of Sangre Chicana and Tony Salazar. So, quite long-running feuds here.
Yeah.
Then he teamed with Ringo Mendoza to take two more hairs. He took the hair of El Nazi and Adorable Ruby.
What a team.
And also the team of Tony Benito and Herodes. And then he lost his hair to El Solitario? I don't know how to say that name.
I think you got it close enough, yeah.
Okay, fine. Close enough, good.
This is my favorite part of the show, just letting you struggle through these lists.
Oh, man. So he also lost it to Ringo Mendoza in 81. He lost it to Lismark in 82. He beat Leo Fiera in 86. He lost it to Sangre Chicana again in 86. He beat Perro Aguayo in 86. Man, he teamed with Ringo Mendoza again. So these guys teamed. They took each other's hair, and then they started teaming again?
And then teamed again, yeah.
Like 10
Keep
years
in mind,
later.
Despite appearances, there were more than like four wrestlers.
Yeah. So they took the hair of MS1 and Mascara. And then they have this match that we're going to talk about. And then 2 years later, he took the hair of MS-1 before he stopped taking people's hair.
Yeah.
Parada Morgan, another really famous guy. We last week, or 2 weeks ago, we talked about his son. So now we're talking about him. He debuted in 79. And he never actually wore a mask. He just kind of wore the eye patch. So.
Yes.
I'm going to skip the ones that they're not sure of the date, because I don't know how they fit in. So his first one, he lost to Cesar Cruella in 80 and in January and in August. So his hair grew back in 8 months. So that's good.
Both him and his son have fast growing hair. I think that's hereditary.
Yeah. He took the hair of Poppy Tukas. He took the hair of Cesar Cruella, I guess, getting his revenge. He lost to El Jalisco in 83. He lost to Halcon Ortiz in 84. In 85, he beat Egipicuco. That was bad. In 86, he took MS-1's hair. He lost to Satanico in 86. Shit, we gotta do, is that match on tape?
God, I hope so. I was digging around yesterday, and I don't think it's on tape, but apparently Negro Casas and Eddie Guerrero had a hair match at one point.
Shit.
And that would have been, I hope someone finds that someday, you know?
Oh man, that sounds good. And then in 86, he took the hair of MS-1. Oh, I already said that. So he took the hair of Tony Salazar next in 87. He lost El Dandy in 88. He beat Steve Nelson in 89. Lost to Annabelle. And then it's this match. Then he has a long career afterwards. A lot of times. I don't think he won a hair match since then. Oh, no, there's a couple. In 2007, he started to win again. But
there you go.
up to 2005, it was a long losing streak of hair matches for him. So, but a classic Parada Morgan, and this match is kind of famous for one spot that we'll talk about.
Oh yeah, at length, I'm sure.
That's the very famous in certain circles, this match. It's not for the weak at heart, but it's a hell of a match.
This is probably the first match that we've had. Every match that we've done so far has had a little bit of blood. But this is probably the first one that should come with like a content warning of some variety, in that it's pretty ghoulish, towards the end. So, I'd be forewarned, you know, spoilers, I guess, but, yeah.
Yeah. And, before the match, they had the announcer just kind of go around to the crowd and say, who's going to win? And it wasn't like you've seen at like SummerSlams and WrestleManias. It was just like all one word answers.
No one gave a reason. It was amazing. Yeah.
It was just like, Farion, Parada Morgan. It was pretty good.
Yeah. The pre-match stuff is well worth a watch. Cause like Morgan does a promo in an empty arena. Yes. There's a lot of good stuff on like the pre-match of the YouTube video.
Yeah. One thing I really enjoyed is they put up just pictures, like cartoon hair on the screen to symbolize it was a hair match.
Yes. Yeah.
It was like, this is hair versus hair. Just like,
there's a lot going on in the production of this match that is very early 90s. And I love it. We can talk about, but when they show like first of all, Farion comes out in this like turquoise windbreaker, it's amazing. Like, it's so 90s. It's like something that your granddad in Florida would wear.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. He also, like, the picture that they use in the, like, when they're sort of promoting the match does not look like Farion. It's like Farion's Tinder.
It's airbrushed and it's...
Yeah, it looks way better than what he actually is. In my notes for this match, I referred to his picture as Mexican Nick Bockwinkle.
Yeah, that's not bad, actually.
Yeah. which is not what Ferion actually looks like. That is what his picture looks like.
How would you describe Elferion's look?
Boy. I mean, he looks a lot like a lot of wrestlers in their 40s, you know?
Yeah.
He doesn't have a bad look. Like, he doesn't look out of shape or anything like that, but no, it's,
he's just a, like, a guy who you can tell used to be, like, really athletic shape and used to be pretty good looking and is now older and more beaten down.
Yes. Yeah. He's
like Al Bundy married with children. In his prime, he scored 4 touchdowns in 1 game. But now.
Ferion does have like a bit of the dad bod going on. He's like the dad bod wrestling.
Anyway, so the first fall, we get blood.
Yeah, we get blood like 30 seconds in. Show record so far.
We get blood, and we get a little more of a back and forth than usual.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, it's interesting because it's a pretty short first fall, all things considered. You know, I mean, it's probably under 5 minutes or so, right? But, you know, after they go around and, you know, Parada Morgan, like, runs Ferion into the ring posts a couple of times, and then he spends a while working the cut, which he's awesome at. I mean, he's so good at it, right?
Yeah.
There's this, like, really great moment, later in the first fall, where Parada is yelling at the referee, and he'd just been biting the cut of Ferion. So his mouth is all bloody with Ferion's like face blood, and he's like screaming, and it's just this like, it's such a visceral image, you know? It really like works and looks at his character. I think it really sort of shows who he is.
Yeah. A very, vicious individual. William Regal or Fit Finley were more violent.
Yes.
Type of situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other person that I always like think about when I watch Parada work, and this one is like, I guess like a little more far fetched because I think your comparisons are really spot on. But Drew McIntyre or Drew Galloway or whatever you want to call him, like when he had that really good run on SmackDown. Like, he was so good about, like, using the apron and the ring posts and the turnbuckles and the stairs as, like, extra advantages that were, like, just on the cusp of legal, you know?
Yeah.
And I think Parada Morgan does the same thing here. And it really adds, you know, like, you know, he's getting over without truly being a rule breaker, you know? And I think that it's really interesting. But yeah, getting back to the original point, this more back and forth fall, you know, Ferion has, not a ton of offense here, and he loses the first fall, in the usual, you know, pattern, I guess. But he does like have some babyface fire, you know. He comes up firing a couple of times, he returns headbutts, he's got a couple big punches, and like, it's interesting because in a lot of lucha matches, like, that would be saved for late in the second fall where they would represent like a real turning of the tide, and here they're sort of just shrugged off, and you know, they continue on with their work, and then Parada eventually hits, like a big splash off the top rope, which is a, you know, a nice big finish to the first fall. And I think it's interesting if we go back to last week, it probably informs a little bit of how, Parada Jr. worked in his, you know, Apuestas match against Golden Magic, in that like, the falls in his matches were all ended with big moves like that. So you wonder if that's something like his dad sort of hampered home in a sort of a stylistic thing of what he wants expect out of a Christmas match, you know?
Or even, like, his dad helps him put together the matches.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, I didn't even mean it from a kayfabe perspective. I just, like, you know, his dad tells him, like, yeah, this is, I think, works, you know? This is my experience of what gets over, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a fun little solid first fall, yeah, as always. Sure. Right.
Yeah. And Ferion is a pretty good bleeder. You know, I mean, he's got blonder hair.
You think he's good, but.
yeah, right.
Wait.
Until Parada says, hold my beer later in the match, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's move on to the second fall.
Yeah.
Which, we head back outside, right?
Yeah. We go back outside. You know, I like this from a narrative perspective. Because I enjoy that Parada, you know, was like, hey, I won this first fall in 5 minutes by doing this. I'm going to try and do that exact same thing. So he goes back and forth, goes back to the ring posts and, you know, hits him again. It doesn't quite work as well. And we do get, some good old fashioned wacky Lucha submissions.
Yeah.
Which is something we haven't really experienced all that much yet. But I love wacky Lucha submissions.
I love wacky Lucha submissions too.
Yeah. They're so great. Fun. Yeah. Like every Lucha match, you see some submission, like I hope we get to do like a Virus match or something on here. Cause you see submissions where you're like, I've never seen anyone do even anything remotely like that. I guess it looks like it hurts. Sure. I buy it. Like,
yeah. But like, to me, it's in the context, right? Like,
oh yeah.
If the Lucha world, these wacky submissions work. And as long as they stick to that narrative, then it's all cool.
Yeah, for sure. You just have to
look like shit in battle arts, but this isn't battle arts.
Yeah. Like, Lucha's its own world, just like Euro is its own world and US wrestling is its own world. You know, granted, those worlds are closer together, but like, you have to view those submissions, and we'll talk about this more in the third fall too, I think, but you view those submissions like as you would a German suplex in something else, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just a move designed not to wear your opponent down or like, you know, create like legwork or something like that, like you'd see in, you know, 80s CrossFit or whatever. It's just a move that's there designed to try and win a match, you know? But it is interesting here that like sort of soon after we get into this wacky Lucha submission world, Parada Morgan has one that's reversed. I don't even remember what it is. And, Ferion immediately sort of gets him in like a surfboard type maneuver and we get a really quick submission. And this fall, like I didn't time them, but like maybe even shorter than the first fall, which is interesting. And not something that you see every day in Lucha. And you know, it's also noteworthy because you don't get a sense in this match like you do in a lot of Apuestas matches that the tide has really turned. A lot of matches in Lucha are set up where, you know, the heel beatdown from the first fall continues into the second fall and continues well into the second fall. And then there's a tope or there's a big punch or there's something that really creates a total reversal of momentum. And that isn't really what's happened here. We've had a lot of miniature shifts and a lot of back and forth. And I think what the story they're trying to tell and the narrative that we've got here is that Ferion is really tough. You know, he's a very tough older guy. He's been in a lot of situations like this. And there's never been a true momentum gathered by Parada Morgan. Or Ferion for that matter. So they both want to fall, but neither man is really in control going into the third fall. You know, we've got sort of a world that's set at zero, but it's not like a team in, you know, to forgive a sports analogy, it's not like a tie game in the fourth quarter when someone's come storming back, like the Super Bowl or something like that. It's more a tie game going into the fourth quarter where no one's been up more than five the whole game. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. I used to watch football, so
I got is there a hockey version of this? No one's been up more than a goal? I don't know.
It's like you're in the second period, and one team's been up 3-1, and now it's 3-3, and we're going into the third. There's still lots of time left, but no one's really taken the advantage.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or it's like a Leafs game where they dominated, and then it goes into the third period, and the other team always comes back. So you just kind of expect it. Sadly. Sadly. Hey, we're in the playoff spot right now, so that's
all that matters. There you go. Good.
So, yeah, we're going into third fall. There was someone in the crowd that you noticed that you wanted to bring up.
Oh, yeah. I put this in my notes. There's a woman in the crowd in this front row that is like a tiny Mexican grandmother. And she has to be like 1,000, right? Like she's like the oldest person in the entire world. And it's amazing. And I wrote in my notes here that I'm going to live my life assuming that that woman is the witch that created Negro Casa. Cause this is the type of thing I think about when watching professional wrestling, not what's actually going on, but the weird fantasy world that I've created where Negro Casa is an immortal demonic creation from a witch.
Well, there's no evidence that he's not.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, I think there's probably more evidence that he is.
That's why if we were to redo GWE, he would go from my number 3 or 4 to my number 1.
Yeah. He's unbelievable. Yeah, it's the more Casas you watch, the more you realize, like, I mean, I'm still pretty convinced, like, I've yet to watch a truly bad Negro Casa. You know, in literally 30 years worth of footage that we have, you know?
You could make the claim he was the greatest wrestler in the late 80s, and you could make the claim he was the greatest wrestler in the world up to a couple of years ago. He's still awesome today.
Yeah, like 2012.
Today.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But we'll do some Negro Casas in the future, and we'll talk.
Yeah, we'll have to. So there's a couple things that I want to mention before we get to the true meat of what we're going to talk about here in the third fall.
You mean the one big spot?
You know, we've talked a lot in previous weeks about how, you know, in my opinion, one of the interesting things and one of the narratives that you have to get used to in Lucha, or the thing that you have to watch out for, is the idea of like closing a circular narrative or returning to major spots to pay off. And whether you want to view that as like purely a narrative trick to keep people interested and to show people what's going on as an idea of symbolism, or if you want to view it as a masculinity thing, which I think is totally fair. You know, that we've got here right at the start of the third fall, Baryon using the ring post on the outside to bloody Parada Morgan. And I think that that really addresses the idea of momentum that we talked about in a subtle fashion. You know, maybe Baryon is more in control than we really thought going in, and that this sort of represents the start of his dominating fall. And I also want to mention Parada Morgan. You know, there's a lot more wacky Lucha submissions in this third fall. Not a lot, or a few more. And Parada Morgan has a skill that is a fair skill that deserves applause and commendation, which he is really great, and I'd never noticed this before, about escaping submissions in a realistic way without a rope break. Like, there's so many times in a wrestling match, like, the WWE annoys the crap out of me for this, where, like, a guy will be in a submission in the middle of the ring, and he'll be all tied up, and, like, he will have no idea how to get out of it, so the other dude will just let go, you know? And Morgan is always, like, shaking and twisting and moving and shimmying, And like, you get the idea that like with two sweaty guys, that are tired, like the way he escapes makes sense. You know, it's just like by constant motion. It really, it's like, it's such a non-lazy way to perform, and it really got a thumbs up for me. I wrote in my notes, it reminds me a lot of Johnny Saint and like the way that Saint escapes stuff. I mean, it looks different than that, but, it's similar, although, you know, in Saint matches, that sort of becomes the entire narrative, and Morgan uses it as sort of an accent to create an idea of struggle, which is really, really good.
Yeah, it was really neat, and I don't think I've ever noticed this from him before, so I'd like to there's more Parada Morgan great matches that we could watch, and I'd like to look out for this again in the future.
Yeah. Same, actually, because again, you know, like there's so many times in Parada Morgan matches where I've watched, and my you know, the thing I remember from the match is like, he bled a lot, right? You know, like, so this is, I do want to go back and rewatch a lot of his other great matches with that lens in mind, you know, and try to get at it. A couple other things that I want to talk about, and we sort of talked about this in the second fall too, but there's a lot of counters in this third fall, and transitions, and changes of who's on offense, out of submissions, which I think could be off-putting to someone who's watching through a lens of American wrestling. And so I just, again, want to sort of make sure that, you know, it's, you try and view a submission here, not as like a hold to wear down a body part or your opponent's sort of stamina in general, but as like a concerted move or pin attempt, you know, or something that would result in a victory in some way. You know, the metaphor that I used in my head, when trying to explain this is like, think about a lucha submission, like, when a boss in a video game, like goes for that big move that you dodge and it leaves them open, like, because the submission is so convoluted that they're, if you can escape it, they're inevitably off balance and in a weird position and you're able to take advantage if you're right there to do it, you know?
Yeah, it was entertaining fall in that degree, and a little bit different than sometimes you see. But I want to talk about my favorite thing in the match until that spot that we're going to talk about in a moment. That I just love this sequence where Ferion hip tosses Parada Morgan to the floor and then hits just an amazing tope.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like, it was so crisp. It looked like deadly. I thought.
For sure. I mean, it's awesome. First of all, I mean, kudos to Parada Morgan for taking a hip toss from the ring to the floor. That's a spot that is probably not advisable.
But this is 1990 and he's still wrestling in 2017. So
yeah,
who knows?
There's something in the water down there. Let me tell you. And then
the side bumps, not the back bumps.
I don't understand
why American companies and stuff enforce this you have to bump on your back rule.
Especially there's been other American wrestlers, like Kurt Hennig comes to mind. That dude never took a bump on his back,
and
you know?
Flair too, like, yeah, after the Flair airplane.
Yeah, so I mean, it, you know, like there's great American wrestlers that had long, good careers without bumping on their back all the time, you know. But anyway, yeah, and the tope, you're right, is awesome. And it's like, it's such a great spot of this, like, this old man who's sort of been getting his ass kicked the entire time to like get his momentum and like get this thing. And then this tope is just so perfect. And it's like, hell yeah, I can still do that. You know, like, I can still, you know, dial it back when I need to, you know?
Yeah, it was like a kind of like a last ditch effort type of thing.
Yes.
Like pulling the goalie when you're down by a goal late in the third.
There you go. Yeah.
There you go.
Real sports. There, yeah.
So now I guess we're at the famous spot.
Yeah. So, you have to watch it, I guess, is the first thing.
The clip, the whole match will be in the description. So yeah, check it out.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't write down like the minute mark or anything. So apologies for that. Maybe I'll do that in the future. There's spots I want to talk about, but, you'll know it when you see it. But Ferion grabs Parada Morgan by the hair on the ring apron and just like three times slams his face into the ring post. And like Parada Morgan does not even come close to protecting himself in any way, shape, or form. Ugh. And like the only thing that I have to compare it to or, you know, even give it some context is like the Nigel McGuinness headbutt to the ring post, in the Danielson match from ROH Unified.
Yeah.
But like, I will go out and I will say, I found this more off-putting and like more violent looking than those. If that gives you any level of what we're dealing with here.
Yeah. Picture that spot, from that Unified match, more violent.
Yeah.
And then picture Nigel McGuinness blading his eyeball.
Yes. Yeah. And like therein lies the thing. So Parada Morgan, who, you know, we talked about this last week too, I think for a little bit, but, does not have a right eye, or, you know, there's something wrong there. And in this match, not only does he blade from his forehead, but he blades from his like eye socket. Cause I guess if you don't have an eye, what's the harm? It's not like you're gonna go blind again.
Yeah, you
right?
can't lose your vision when you don't have it.
Yeah, right? So he figures he's playing with house money in that regard. Oh, gosh.
It's so wrong, but so good.
Yeah, and like, I mean, you know, we talk about the Muda scale, right? Like, I mean, this is like a 10 on the Muda scale, right?
This is a 15 on the Muda
scale. I mean, this is the bloodiest I've seen a wrestler in a long, long time. Like, I mean, think about the worst blade job you've ever seen. Like, you know, to bring it back to Ring of Honor again, you know, like the Jay Briscoe in the Samoa Joe match. Necro Butcher in the Samoa Joe match.
Oh, yeah.
Like this is at that level, if not surpassing it. Yeah, it's something else. I mean, you know, I think that's what I have to say about that. I mean, you really just have to watch it, I guess. I don't know how much more descriptive I can get. But the match does continue on from here.
Yeah, that's not the finish.
Yeah, that is not the finish, shockingly enough. They just keep going. It's close to the finish.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess, you know, there's a couple other things. There's a really great near fall that I bid on pretty hard, off a victory roll reversal, where Ferion goes for a victory roll and Parada rolls through. And, you know, it really, really, you know, the crowd went for it. It looked really good. Like his body language, which I can't even really describe why it looks like this, but the way that he sits down in it makes it look like it's the final pin. You know, it doesn't look like a counter. It looks very, very end worthy. Which, you know, deserves to be studied, I guess. We do get one of my favorite lucha tropes, which is people with hankies from the crowd going up and wiping blood off of faces.
To take home as a souvenir.
Yeah, I guess.
Or to clone for future.
To clone Parada Morgan, an army of Parada Morgans.
Oh, man. That sounds like the best movie ever.
Yeah, the best version of Star Wars. The Empire totally would have won.
Maybe. We don't know this, but maybe all the stormtroopers are clones of Piranha Morgan.
Yeah, maybe. In my headcanon of Star Wars, that's what they are now.
If you discount the prequels, which you should.
Yeah, as you should, right? There's one thing that I guess I'll talk about a little bit at length here before we get into the finish, which we'll probably talk about for a good bit. If you'll forgive a little religion talk, I studied religion in college. I enjoy reading it, regardless of your thoughts on spirituality or anything. I think it's an interesting topic. One of my favorite books is called Subversive Sequels in the Bible, which is by a woman named Judy Klitzner. And it's about how within the Old Testament, there are stories that are repeated with minor changes that like then sort of reinforce a lesson or like a cultural change that we should anticipate and think about. Like a good example that she gives is the Noah story and the Jonah story, or the Tower of Babel story and the Exodus, and sort of like looking at the similarities and then the differences between, and how like at pivotal moments within those stories, there will be sort of like a minor shift that will then inform the new moral of those and sort of what you should be looking out for. And I thought about that in here with the mist splash, that like if you look at the falls as sort of different stories within the same book, that this mist splash after starting off with the turnbuckles again is sort of like an interesting subversion in some ways a reflection, a mirror of the first fall that we've gotten. And that's sort of setting up, the rest of it in some way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And what I find interesting is that often in wrestling, early on, something will be tried and it doesn't work, for the babyface or whatever. And then later on, the babyface will hit it. But this is kind of a complete reversal on it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I like that a lot. You know, I think that it's a really interesting way to build a match, based around sort of what, not the babyface getting better offensively, but the babyface sort of finding that extra reserve to subvert something defensive. I think is cool.
Yeah, very cool. And then basically it all comes down to Piranha Morgan is bleeding so badly.
Yes.
Just the doctor at ringside. Well, at first, actually, it looks like the doctor looks at his cut and says, okay, let's go. He's fine.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. Just utterly ridiculous. Like, I thought that was the finish. But then the referee just let them go. So I guess the referee or this doctor somehow looked at Piranha Morgan's bleeding eye and was like, yeah, it's fine.
yeah, Morgan does like, so the doctor's looking at it and like sort of noncommittally is like, nah, he probably shouldn't wrestle anymore. Right. And then Morgan, overhearing this conversation, I'm assuming, gets up and like, tries to continue to fight, and they're just like throwing bones and like hitting each other with haymakers while the referee is like trying to figure out like, should I, like, what's the deal here?
I swear I saw the referee do the let's go, let's fight.
Yeah. The ref is out for blood. He wants a clear end to this, which he does not get, because the doctor is correct. This probably should have been stopped. There we go. We get in an Apuestas match, a feud finishing match. We get a Dusty-esque finish, shall we say? A pretty protected finish. You know, it's certainly not decisive. Let's that way at least.
No, not at all. But you know, it was like a rewarding finish if you wanted to see El Farion win, because, you know, he he bloodied up Parada Morgan to the point that he couldn't continue.
Yeah, I mean, in that regard, it's very decisive. You know, I think if you're a fan of the babyface, you know, like, which, like, wrestling should be booked for fans of babyfaces, right?
Yeah.
That, like, this is a tremendously satisfying finish. Because, I mean, you can't look any stronger than making someone, But I do think too, like, to sort of, view this match through the lens of hindsight a little bit. And like, if you look at this in the way of like Parada Morgan's career now and character now and like how he portrays himself in interviews, like he sort of always, you know, I get the impression, you know, in the translated interviews that I'll read and things like that, that he views himself as like a great, like, Satanico or, you know, Blue Panther or somebody like that. But he's like passed over and not viewed by the fans in that way. And he sort of always, you know, is very bitter and, you know, thinks he's screwed. And like, I do like this finish in that regard because it does inform that of like, yeah, like maybe you were screwed, you know, like I sort of feel like you're screwed, you know?
I didn't know that about Morgan. That's great.
Yeah, like, you know, he gave an interview a while ago that someone like was translating it. I forget who, one of the people on Twitter, where, you know, he was like talking about how he doesn't feel like he's viewed as much as like he should be viewed as a maestro in the same way that, you know, El Dandy and all of them are, you know, he's not. Yeah. So.
But like a blood maestro, I guess.
Yeah, a blood maestro. That should be his nickname, like the El Sangre Maestro, just like Virus is, you know, El Pequeño Maestro, right?
Yeah. So we talked about the finish. So El Farion really just had one more big match left about a year after this, where he took on MS1 in a hair match at Reno, Mexico. So I guess it's not too bad that he won. It's a little harder with hair, because like masks, it's really like you can clearly look back and go, okay, this was a mistake, this wasn't.
Yeah.
For hair, it grows back, so it's a little different.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, I understand why he won, you know, and I think it's a good finish. I do, you know, like I can understand if someone came up to me and they said, I watched this match and I loved it until the finish, I would say, I totally get where you're coming from. But like, it personally does not bother me, you know?
Yeah.
But I can understand a wrestling fan not be, you know, being bothered by not having sort of what is traditionally a decisive victory. I do get the impression, you know, and I'm this is purely conjecture. You know, I know nothing about the behind the scenes goings on of 1990 EMLL. But like, I do feel like there's probably something political at play here, right? Like, Parada Morgan was super hot at this time, and Farion is like an older guy. Like, I imagine that he probably did not want to lose clean, and, you know, someone decided, rightly so, that Parada Morgan should also probably not lose clean. And this is what they came up with as like the booking compromise, but that is pure conjecture. I have no proof of that whatsoever.
You know what's interesting is that, so El Farion's last big match was MS1 hair match about a year and a half later. About 4 months after this match, Parada Morgan beat MS1 in a hair match.
That's interesting.
So yeah. I don't know, Los Infernales feuding here. But it might have been a bigger story with El Farion and Parada Morgan, MS1, all mixed up. I'm not sure.
Yeah, for sure.
But either way, highly recommended match.
I'd go, what,
5.5 stars?
5.5 stars. Maybe 6 stars? Maybe 6 stars?
6 stars, maybe. I like my 5.5 rating.
I'll tell you what, in all seriousness, the 24 odd minutes of this are way better than the first 24 minutes of a match that famously got stars. So
I've never actually seen that famous match.
Okay.
I have no real desire to.
Yeah, I mean, it's like,
not really my jam.
Yeah, we can talk about it off the air, but like it's a good wrestling match. I feel like not to insult anyone that really loves that match. I get it. Like it is obvious why it is highly regarded. But I feel like everyone as a wrestling fan goes through a phase where they equate longer with automatically like more emotional and better and more impactful.
And, yeah, I used to do that too.
Yeah. And like I remember when I was like first really getting into wrestling and I'd be like, oh man, this Kabachi Dr. Death match is 37 minutes. It's going to be awesome. Right? and then eventually like maybe if you watch a lot of wrestling and you don't necessarily have to, you know, some people do love really long matches, may come to the conclusion that there can be short great matches too, or there's a sweet spot, you know, that it's sort of like a bell curve. To me, that match, while very, very good, might have been better, let me say diplomatically, if perhaps it was edited down slightly. Let's put it that way.
I don't know. I don't think you should say anything bad about New Japan. You lose followers on Twitter.
I will probably lose some followers on Twitter. That's okay.
I did that day. but speaking of Twitter, how does someone follow you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter at Wrestling Bubble. And yourself?
I'm Stephen Graham TWS.
Perfect.
And if you want to have us review a certain match, if you have any questions you want us to bumble our way through the answer, you can hit us up there or on Pro Wrestling Only. There'll be a thread for this podcast. You can ask it there. And yeah, let us know our thoughts.
General feedback. We love hearing you know, what you guys think of the sound of our voices almost as much as we love the sound of our voices. So yeah, please continue letting us know what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong.
And until next time.
It's a pleasure.